My name is Daniel. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I come from a strange country called Santa Barbara, California. I'm originally from Los Angeles, but I moved up there. And Santa Barbara is about a town about an hour away from Los Angeles, so don't confuse it with Los Angeles. It is not. It's a small town. The main street is State Street, and it has a series of shops and bars and restaurants. And if you take that out of the equation, you got a little town that everybody knows everyone, everybody knows about everybody's business, and so it's not Los Angeles. So you can't hide out in meetings because we're very limited with our meetings because we have small towns. In Los Angeles, I can hide in many meetings, you know, go to different areas and districts. But here in Santa Barbara, I'm learning how to live a small town life, and I really appreciate that. I love those people a lot, too, as well. My home group meeting, which is the Wednesday night 7:30 OA meeting, has sent a gift to y'all, to one of you, and we will give it tomorrow after the session, and it's a gift from our meeting to you. And so, who was here last night? Okay, who came in today, though? Hi, what's your name? Terry. Okay, hi. And where are you from? Oh, okay, well, welcome. Who else just came here? Were you here last night? No, what's your name? Jenny, where are you from? Louisiana, okay. And you don't look good. Hi. Oh, welcome, and how about you? Oh, my goodness. And you? Okay. St. Louis, Missouri? Oh, basically, oh, I'm sorry. That's it. Oh, no, sorry. I met you already. No, I know you. Yeah, how about you, Jenny? Okay, hey, great. Who else? Okay, over there. How about you, sir?
Joe from Baton Rouge, Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Yes, Joe Tigers. No, I'm not going to say anything. How about you? Okay, well, welcome. I'm glad you guys are here, and I'm happy to be here. I learned a lot this morning. I learned how to eat grits. I was not... You're supposed to use a fork and put cheese and salt and pepper and scrambled eggs if you want. So everybody had their own interpretation, but I did eat it with a fork. So I do acknowledge that, and it was delicious breakfast. Thank you very much. What else came? Well, we got best of both worlds. We got shopping and recovery. What else do you want? I find it kind of ironic. Anyway, so I had a really good time with you guys last night, and we were like, shared my experience with hope and about a lot of things. And this morning we did the meditation. And we were just focusing, as it says in page 86 of the big book, and upon awakening, we ask our God to help us and guide us and have our minds be divorced of selfish and self-motivating thoughts. In other words, just to be in focus with God for today. And so that's a great way to start the day. And it's very simple. It's not complicated. You don't have to climb a huge mountain to the top to get in touch with a higher power. You don't have to go into the deepest valleys either. You can have them here with you at any time you want. Anytime we get together, step two comes alive. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And so we're here together, so that means that power is with us here today. And this is why we can't do this program alone. I can't do it without you. I need you. You are God's instruments to me. God speaks to you. My God has skin, and it's all in you. You know, and I need you to help me with my disease. Because I have a disease that manifests itself in my body, but in my brain, too, and in my life. So I need you guys to give me some form of help that'll help me just for today. I don't want you to help me tomorrow. No, I want you to help me yesterday. I just want you to help me today. Help me to stay here with you. Help me to forget what I left at home, what's not done in the office, who I haven't talked to. Be with me here. And it's easier said than done. Because like I said last night, I'm a time traveler. I love to go into the past and visit my depression. And I love to go into the future where my anxiety and fear wait for me. And I forget about today. And how are you doing, Daniel? I'm doing great.
How do you feel? I said, fine.
When I've been visiting the prison, I'm scared to death.
Oh my God, the IRS, they're going to get me. When they find out it works, they're going to fire me. I'm going to be bankrupt. Those are the fugitives.
I go into the past.
Yeah, could have, should have, and why didn't I do it? What if I just did this? The idea, I think, for me is just that, to understand that all I have is today.
That's all that God promised me today. And if I die today, this is as good as it got. Life is not a rehearsal. It's a one-time shot. So fortunately, we've been given a program that can help us achieve that. But it requires you and me. You know. And it requires that we are willing to surrender, to let go. Let go and let God, or let go and get dragged. You know? And that means I let go of all my thoughts, my expectations, my plans. They say in the program, if you're one of them, God laughs, tell them your plans. And he has had a ball with me.
You know, I must keep him laughing a lot because I tell him, you don't understand, God. I need this person in my life.
She is the one, God, and please, and once she's there with me, I'm saying, what was I thinking about? Oh, my God, why did you let me do this?
To surrender requires that I've been in the battle, that I've been fighting, that I've been getting beaten up over and over and over. And this thing called food has really whipped me. And you can see it in my brain, how I think, and how I look. And like I said last night, out of all the addictions that I have, this one has to be the most shameful because I carried it on the outside. You know, if I'm an alcoholic, unless the breath test me, or a drug addict, unless the test is for drugs, you don't know. You can't tell. But my disease manifests itself in my body. You'll tell. And like the pictures that were shown last night, I went up to 400 pounds. And you would think once I hit 400 pounds and the guy that had the biggest tall place that I shopped for, which I never saw any coffee, but I reached size 58, and he said to me, you know, if you keep getting bigger, we're not going to be able to fit. You're going to have them tailor-made. So my head said, oh, my God, I won't be able to buy any more clothes. It won't fit. And then I said, well, you know what? I do deserve a tailor. That's my fault. So I am an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, you know, and that's how I had my clothes are tailor-made. And I remember paying $60 for a pair of Dockers, and I guess you guys know I hate Dockers. I don't wear Dockers because those are the only ones that I can wear. And to this day, I do not wear Dockers. I will wear jeans or slacks, but I will not wear Dockers. Watch this. I'm going to wind up with a pair of Dockers one day. But what I say, I'll never do wind up doing. But I got scared. I said, my God, 58 size waist. What am I going to do? Well, the first time I raised, well, I got to lose weight. I got to lose weight. Okay, so obviously, if you go to a doctor, the first thing, what do they do when you first go to the doctor? And I hated that, right? Get on the scale. It's like, why do we have to get on the scale? Why can't I just tell you what's wrong with you? You know, why do you need to know that? It's just a friggin' number. So I hated going to doctors because get on the scale. And sometimes I wish that the same administrative assistant or the little girl that's for the candy sucker that's out there making me get on top of the friggin' scale would not be there that day. But she would always be there. Get on the scale. And then she'd move the scale back and forth. And I'd go, oh my God, don't move it anymore. Don't move it anymore. You know, leave it there. I'm 100 pounds. Leave it there. She would purposely slide that weight scale on one drug, and I'm going, she's making that horrible sound back and forth. And I'm like, hurry up, get over with it. I cannot get off of this thing. You would think I'm standing on some sort of ledge, ready to jump off a cliff.
So that is not good. Normal people don't do that stuff. So I have really a very crazy way of thinking. Now, I've been told in this program that food is just a symptom. It's not the cause. Now, wait a minute. You don't understand. My problem is sugar and white flour, you know, and that's why. Well, if you really think about it, we eat to relax. We eat to sedate ourselves to feel calm. We eat to feel energy, supposedly. We eat so I can put up with my mother-in-law or my father-in-law or my nieces, nephews, and sons. But we eat. Okay? We eat when we're nervous. We eat when we're angry. We eat when we're sick. We eat when we're happy. We eat when we're sad. Okay, so those are the reasons I eat. Resentment, whatever, whatever. Now, you take away the very thing that helps me relax and get over those things, what do you got? You got a person that's really pissed off. Very angry. Because I don't have the medication to stop it. And this is what blows my mind when they say, I'm on a food plan. I said, and how do you feel? I feel great. Well, you're doing something wrong, pal. What do you mean? Because you're supposed to feel like, excuse the word, crap. You're going to feel better. Better anxiety, better anger, better resentment. Why? Because you don't have this stuff to stop it anymore. And we don't like that. Somewhere along the line, someone taught us that we were supposed to eat to feel good. And you know, parents do that. Here, it's for you. I begged it for you. Okay, well, that makes sense. But the problem is, now I can't stop eating. And it could be 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm driving to that special place where they sell those famous donuts or that special meal. And I will travel 70 miles for that special donut. Then I get into recovery. They say, I ask, well, how much is the big book? Well, it's about $7. Oh, that's too expensive. I will drive as far as I can for my disease, but for my recovery, I'm going, well, yeah, but I can't. Just the priorities. That's what our brain does. Yeah. So the question is, if you're ready to surrender, it's because you've been in a battle. And we were talking last night, who are we surrendering to? And we did ask what we wanted in God or a higher power, and someone said love, acceptance, and all these things. So the great attributes, it's really nice to have that. But I want to share again, the higher power of God that I have today is a happy God. It's a content God. I can't do anything to get him pissed off. There really is. So my youngest son said to me, says, you know, Danny's gay. My oldest son. And I looked at him and said, so what? Well, he's gay. And I looked at David. I said, David, what could Danny do that would possibly stop me from loving him? What? I love him anyway. He's happy. I'm happy. Can't do anything about it. I used food in the past. I used food to deal with life. That's all I have. I had drugs and alcohol at one time, but now I have food. And that's the last thing you want to take away from me. So I will go to the meetings. I will do the writing. I will call. But I will not let go of the food. And that's what got me fired from one sponsor. She said, beautiful little Adam Natalie. She's an icon in Los Angeles. And little old lady, she sponsored me. Or she used to sponsor me. She said, Danny, I'm going to have to let you go. I said, what do you mean? I'm going to fire you. I said, what? Natalie, I'm doing everything you want. And she said, you're not letting go of the food. Well, see, my head goes from excess to diet. Back and forth. Yeah, and I picture myself, if I'm on a diet, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. So, God forbid, since it's 6:15, we've already missed dinner. 6:25. We've already missed dinner. Oh, my God, I'm not dead yet. But my head says, I better eat because I'm going to die. And last night, when everybody cleared out, a lot of us were sitting around, I asked, what does hunger feel like to you? At 400 pounds, I never felt hunger. I just ate. I never ate. So when I started losing all this weight, I went back to the doctor one day and said, "Doctor, I got two things for you. First of all, I have this burning sensation and I get all anxious and I feel nervous and jittery." He said, "Maybe you're hungry." "What? Hungry? I never knew that. And plus, I think I got a tumor. It's right here. That's your breastbone." Then I said, "Are you sure I'm okay? I've been separated from my body for a long time. I use my brain to make some decisions, and I use my heart to make other decisions. And it's always one is stronger than the other. My heart and my brain and my heart. My body says, 'Daniel, we can't eat anymore. We're breaking chairs. We can't fit in the clothes.' My brain says, 'Ah, we can do it again. We'll be fine. We'll just watch it next week. There's always tomorrow. I always love it. Tomorrow, you know, in my office, I love the women. They're beautiful. But there's always Diet Monday. Followed by screw it, please, 12 o'clock. So, in the morning I come in, I find carrot sticks and broccoli and celery. I'm saying, where's the bagels? Where's the pastry? And I know that by 12 o'clock, those things will be gone, and they brought in most of that. Strudels and all that stuff. I say, "Well, we're being bad." "Oh, Daniel, I'm being bad." "Oh, okay." And I remember that because that's how I felt. I'm eating badly. I'm a bad person. So I ate like that. I was punishing myself with food. Either I reward myself with food punish myself with food. Now, it's in my experience that, remember, I don't speak for OA, this is just Daniel speaking, I have an attitude that I have to change, a thinking that was taught to me long ago. It went like this: "Danny, if you do your chores, I'll let you watch TV. Danny, if you clean your room, do your homework, rest the yard, I'll let you go play with your friends." So that's it. And we've been raised like that. Okay, practically all of us. "If you do this, I'll let you do that." So then we grow up and says, "If you go to school and you get your degree, I'll buy you that car." So we've developed a pattern. It's called, I've endured, I'm entitled, I get to be rewarded. And that's how I live life. I've had a hard day at the office. My boss rolled my, you know what, and I'm ready to kill him. But thank goodness I have my meals I can go to, or I can do my drugs, or I can drink, or I can do something out there to make me feel rewarded. And that type of thinking, my friends, has gotten me into trouble. Because after I lost the weight, I had that thinking. I endured to be entitled to be rewarded. But now the food isn't there. How am I going to get rewarded? And this is what happens to many of us. We think that by getting rid of the symptom, that we've cured the disease. No. Now we've got to deal with the thinking, our attitude. You know, I always walked around feeling entitled. You know, I paid the price. You know, I'm entitled. I've endured. Then my sponsor said, "You've got to work on that." He says, "There's no such thing as a victim. There are only volunteers." And I have to address that. So it's really hard to feel depressed when you have gratitude. I challenge you to try that. Feel grateful and then try to get depressed. It's really hard. It's like, "Oh, thank you God for this thing." I feel depressed. It's really hard. But I've had a repentance with gratitude. I have to, if I surrender my day for today, my day to God, that means that what's in this day today is supposed to be that way. Oh boy, that's not good. Because I got a plan. I'm supposed to call so-and-so, and I'm supposed to see so-and-so, I have to do this. I'm already refused. No, just for today, what was given to me. This morning we had a meal. It was just food, that's all it was. It was just a meal. So that entitlement, or enduring to be entitled to be rewarded mentality, a lot of us addicts have it. So when you take the very thing that stops these feelings away, you still got a bad attitude. And I was talking about last night that my lenses had SHIT lenses. You notice I'm not touching it. It's pretty cool. I'm really watching myself. I'm really scared of the teachers. I hope they're not here. I had, shit lenses. And all I saw was shit. Good shit, no shit, other shit, but it was shit. And don't snitch on me because I just said that. But anyway, shit is the acronym for special high intensity thinking. And that's what I love to do. I think that way. I always think the negative. So, here's what was happening. I'm not responsible for what goes in my head, what thought comes into my head. I'm responsible for the ones I entertain. And 9 times out of 10, I'll entertain the negative ones. I'll do that. Because that's how I'm programmed. And that way, it makes me feel bad about my situation. And this way, I feel really sick. And this way, I need to be rewarded. It's a wonderful little pattern of dysfunction that I love to talk to use as a coping skill. So I'm a martyr. I'm a victim. But when you replace that with gratitude and surrender, I said last night that willingness, when I look at that, willingness means that I'm cheerfully compliant. Well, no, I'm not cheerfully compliant. You got one pissed off dude that's not eating. Because his attitude hasn't changed. He still feels that that's a reward. But when you look at it, say, it's just a meal. It's just nutrition for my body. I don't really need a lot. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. That's what it says. I just want to eat it as a meal. Do you know there are people out there that can have one beer with their meal and they're happy? They can actually have a mixed drink and drink and that's it. My former wife, we went to, on the second anniversary, we went to this beautiful restaurant next to the ocean view with dolphins and really pretty sunset. And the waiter comes up to me and says, can I get something from the bar? Someone. My wife says, she looks at the menu and says, I'll keep the green apple martini. And how about you? Diet Coke. So, comes back, gives me the Diet Coke, and then he comes and brings this beautiful drink, luminescent green. And it's in this beautiful glass, and he places it slowly in front of her. And I'm in awe. I'm going, this is beautiful. And she picks it up, and she goes, yummy. She puts it down. I'm an alcoholic. That's it? You're not going to go more? So anyway, start the conversation, got me on, we're talking, blah, 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 blah. And then she just sticks a couple of sips out of it, and it's about half this one. I said, honey, you can have more? And she says, not right now. We continue talking. You better pay for that. I'm paying $9 for that. It's all over my head. But we're continuing talking, and I'm taking a pause. So, we finished the meal, and that drink never moved. I said, honey, you going to finish that? She says, no, I've had enough. And I said, I'm paying $9 more in my head. I'm paying $9 for this friggin' drink. And I walked away from that table looking at that drink, staring at it, wondering if they would put it in an aluminum foil and make a swan of it so I could take it home, because they're, that's drinking irresponsibly. You know what the difference was with her and me? To her, it's just a beverage. It has no meaning. It's not a vacation. It's not to get away from my worries. It was just a beverage. It could have been orange juice. It could have been apple juice. It could have been cola, whatever. It was just a beverage to her. Now, I should have known that because when I first dated her, I went to her place for 4th of July. We're going to walk to the high school watch the fireworks. And I said, do you have, because in the valley in Los Angeles, she lived, it's really hot. And I said, do you have any cold water? She said, it's in the fridge. Oh, okay. So I went and opened up. And in the door of the refrigerator, there's about 4 Budweiser bottles. I said, oh, you have beer. She says, oh, yeah, my family was here for Christmas dinner. She had beer from Christmas dinner in July. I said, oh, my God. I should have known that I was dealing with somebody who just doesn't get it when it comes to alcohol. Do you know there are people that can have a couple of chips, potato chips, and then put the bag away? Do you know that? There are people who put out their cigarettes on their pie? My God. You know, you feel like you want to strangle them? What is wrong with you? So, I belong to another program, which is an outside issue, and I invited my sponsee to come help me clean up, because I was the cleanup chair. And we had a big flat of cake that was an anniversary for me. And we've only eaten half, because that's how many people, and that was the rest is there. So he goes, I said, what do you want me to do with the cake? I said, I don't know, let me ask the other chairs. I said, what are we supposed to do with cake? Well, throw it away. Throw it away. He looks at me, what? Throw it away. Are you sure? That's what she said. She said, throw it away. And you could see tears building up in his eyes. As he's throwing it slowly to the car, and he looked at it. You know, we give food magical powers. Like the alcoholic gives alcohol magical powers. We expect it to do what it's not supposed to do. The alcoholic believes that by drinking, he's going to become smarter and more intelligent. And some of us do, really. But okay, how smart I got. 1974. I'm dating myself now. Disco dance. Bell bottoms. Colors. Polyester. Checkerboard. I hope that picture never gets out. But anyway. We've been drinking and doing dope. And somebody lights up one of those sparkling fountains. Says to me, I bet you can't jump over that. Yeah, I can. And I jumped over that 6 times. You don't jump over flames with polyester pants. I woke up in the morning with burns I thought I'd never thought I'd have. What happened? And my wife says, well, you're acting like a fool last night. So apparently, alcohol is not supposed to make me look smarter. I do foolish things. Same thing with food. I do crazy things with food. I'm not talking about the chicken that flew out the window. And I had 5-piece meal, and I cooled the chicken leg with sticking it outside the door, and cooled it off, and it was really good. And I said, this is great. Like, and then I grabbed the wing, held it up, and it slipped out of my fingers, and I wanted to slam on the brakes, and oh my God, and I'm on the freeway, cars behind me, so there's somebody with a windshield with my chicken wing on it, thinking that that's God's will. That's how he's got. Normal people don't do those things with food. Because to them, it has no magical powers. It's just a meal. But in my household, you got to eat everything because there's starving kids in China. And I said to my grandma, what if I send them this food? I don't want it. You got to eat it all. So I belong to the Clean Plate Club. You have to eat. More is better. And I knew cities by the restaurant. I didn't know them by streets. Go to this deli. Oh, yeah. Oh, go to this other restaurant. Oh, they give you big portions. So what I loved to do was to eat so much that it would just shut everything down. And just relax. You know, and you have that moment with that heroin addict that he feels when he shoots that heroin up his vein. He has a sensation of everything is right with the world. Yeah. That's amazing. The magical power of food. And it seems that I have the capacity to make food to release more dopamine in my system. So I feel pleasure. How did that happen? How did that cause my food to turn into more exercise and dopamine release? I don't understand that. How was I able to do that? Well, it happened over years and years and years. My grandmother comes from the Depression era where if a fat baby is a healthy baby. So you keep eating it. Then she said, oh, it's cute and clothing and pinky, you know. And it's cute when you're a little kid, but when you start getting into elementary school, that's not cute. And then you become a teenager, you're still getting fatter. You know, and then they do the weigh-ins in school, and that was embarrassing. And then nobody wants to date a fat guy. So you do have food and drugs and alcohol. So You don't date. You don't socialize. You don't know how to develop your personality. You don't know how to interact with sex. You don't even know how to interact with males. So because you've lost yourself, because we have a small world called compulsive overeating, that's all we do. If you come over to my house, it's going to be food in the mix. I don't want to emphasize this. What kind of drinker do you think you are?
She said, I'm a social drinker. I said, why? Because I don't drink alone.
I said, no, that's not a social drinker. A social drinker means that the event that they go to, the event is more important than the drink. So the anniversary, the wedding couple, I'm there for them. Or the birthday couple. A guy, Bill, God bless him, he called me up one day and said, I want you to come to my daughter's 5th birthday. I said, okay, man, what are you going to have to drink? He said, well, punch, ice cream, and cake. I said, yeah, but what are you going to have for us? You know, I'm a little dope, being an alcoholic. He said, well, it's my daughter's 5th birthday. Punch, ice cream, and cake. I could not understand why this fool was wasting my time to come over his house. Why would I want to come over to have that? You're not going to have her. It's my daughter's 5th birthday. Don't you understand that? So for Thanksgiving, you go because you want to be with people. You want to tolerate that aunt you can't stand. Or that cousin of yours. Or your mom. Or your dad. And you're hoping, oh God, I hope the meal's better than this. And you can't wait for the meal. And it comes. Hurry up, let's eat. And we're like lions on a prey, on the carcass. And we don't even talk to each other. You know, and don't dare reach for my drumstick because I'll chop your hand off. And that's the exact main thing. It's not the fact that we're there to do an act of thankfulness for what we've been given, but because of the food, that's what it's all about. Excess. You know, we just finished Halloween in our area, and there's these huge patches with all this leftover pumpkin. It just goes to waste. It's pretty amazing. We're one of the most wasteful nations in the world. So commercialized. But that's how I think. More is better. More is better. So I had to stop using food to sedate me. But I only had to do it if I was willing to surrender. Only if I was willing to be accountable. I was telling the ladies last night, I would much rather tell you about my sex life than to tell you what I ate. Because that's how much food has shame attached to it. I reward myself with food, I punish myself with food, and I feel shameful with food. So that's why I hide. And a lot of us had meals under a plate, under our beds, under the first, you know. My former mother-in-law, I know she's not going to hear this, so. My daughter, or my ex, she drove her car to the thicket of my family somewhere, and she slammed on the brake, and all these candy wrappers flew out from under the seat. And she got, what is all that stuff coming out? Well, because her mom was a compulsive woman, she wrapped it up, she put it on the seat, right? And, you know, and she said, oh, no, I can't eat that. Do you want a candy wrapper? Oh, no, I don't eat. And then all these wrappers came out. When I surrender, I want to make sure that who I'm surrendering to really, really, really has kicked my butt. So throughout my life, there's been several bottoms. I've hit not just one, several. Incomprehensible demoralization. I did it again and again and again and again. Because all I ever wanted to do, like in the big book, all I wanted to do was to drink like a normal person. All I wanted to do was eat like a normal person. That's all I ever wanted to do in life. And I just couldn't do it. I would do it good for a few days, but then I would go back to the same patterns of eating with the, oh, well, I'll try it tomorrow. Because my thinking wasn't ready to surrender. So I have a gap that I've been trying to fill with people, places, and things, and foods, and drugs, and all that stuff. And it's in here. So my brain and my heart has been separated for a long time. And I have to honor that space that's there because it belongs to God. My sponsor calls it the God space. Don't mess with that area. That belongs to God. But you don't understand. It's scary. It feels horrible to feel that emptiness. Yes, that's God's space. You don't mess with that. But when I feel sad and I feel angry and then all of a sudden I feel this void in my heart, what am I supposed to do? He said, ask God, your will be done. This too shall pass.
You let go. You feel the feeling. Feel the uncomfortableness. You know that you'll come out of this. You're not meant to be there forever.
You're supposed to process feelings that were stuffed down long ago.
Feelings don't go away. They just get suppressed.
So, when you're on an abstinence and you're following a self-food plan, you're feeling all these feelings. You're getting in touch with the God state. And that's how you know you're doing something good for yourself. How many exercises? How many like to exercise?
There are people that love to run and jog, you know, and they do that. Now, when I was 400 pounds, I screwed up my knees, so I really have that knee, but that's why I do cycling. But I remember going out to a marathon runner. I asked, how long do you run? She said, well, every day I run about 15 miles. What? I said, what if I told you that I could do that right now? She said, I don't think you could do that 15 miles. And she's like, why? Because you have to keep at it. Get at it, right? Perseverance. Perfect. So you don't become abstinent overnight. Just keep at it. God, I'm surrendering my food to you. God, this is your food. God, this is what you prepared for me. God, this is it. You and I, God. You and I.
You made food for us to help nourish us. It wasn't made to reward us or medicate us. It was just to make us to have a wonderful day. That's all it's for. It's nutrition. So there are no magical powers to food. We've given it. Like the little kid that my oldest son, when he's about 2 years old, he walks in the dark. And you know, we'll say, who get out of there, the boogeyman. You know? He wasn't scared of the dark until I told him that. After that, he was scared. He wouldn't go into the dark. There was a time that I ate food like it was just a meal. But somebody told me to give it magical powers. So if you really want to let go, you don't stand on the cliff deciding back and forth. You jump. Now that's where it takes faith. If I was talking to you that this disease is handled by therapy alone, a lot of us would be healed. But listen, let me ask you a question. No offense to none of the therapists or anything like that. But if you're in therapy for 5 years and you're still talking about your mom, all you have is a well-defined problem. You don't have solutions. Meaning you're going to have to protect me after this. So this is the thing about it. We love talking about our problem, but we don't like to talk about the solution. And that's what Paul said to him. Come and see. I can't blame my mom anymore, and I can't blame my dad or my uncle or my kid. I can't do that anymore because I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. That's a little touchy subject. A lot of us have sexual molestation as children. Some of us were even hurt, abused, and severely damaged. And there's a reason people get up to 400 pounds. And I carried that shame for a long time, and this is what it was explained to me. The reason it happened to you is not because it was you, Daniel, but because you were there. It could have been someone else. Because you were there. So you don't have to carry the shame why it happened to you. All you know that it happened because it happened to be there. I took a big weight off my head. For a long time, I felt really, really, really sick about it. So now that goes into God's face. The question for me is, am I doing God's will or God's job? Most of the time I'm doing God's job. Because I know better. The truth is, I don't know better. I don't know what's good for me. How can I tell what I know what's good for you? You know? But I do know, unless I feel, I'm not going to heal. Basically it. Feel to heal. Yeah. Face your stuff or stuff your face. One of the two. I kept waiting for that magical day when God was going to zap me absent. Wow, I don't crave potato chips anymore. Wow, I don't eat potato. No. Never happened like that. You know, my experience with overeating was not like Bill W. that saw the light in his room. No. The only thing I saw in my light in my room was TV still on when I was passed out. So there was no spiritual experience. But there was a lot of bottoms hit that I cannot believe myself that I'm down again where I thought I'd never do it again. Why? Because I am a jaywalker. I cross the street, I get hit by a car, I go up to you, I got hit by a car. Daniel, well, don't cross it. Use the side, use the pedestrian. Oh, thank you very much. And I walk away and I say, you know what? I got that impulse. I'm going to do it. I cross and I do the jaywalking and get hit by a car. Hey, I got hit by a car again. What to do? Well, I jaywalk. Well, why didn't you go to the pedestrian? Good idea. And I walk away and I jump again. I get hit by the car. Well, what's wrong with you, Daniel? Stupid? No. Why? I have a compulsion. I have an uncontrollable compulsion to do something with food that I need that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. How many here get food talks to them? How many have, like, you know, celery calling you from the refrigerator? Come eat me. Broccoli, come eat me quick. Right? How many feel that? You get there, my onions are calling to me. I got to eat my onions. No. It's usually the cakes, the pastries, the chocolate. Oh, it's calling me. I prefer if I got caught by, you know, broccoli. You got to go eat me. I can't go see you today because I got to eat my broccoli. It's calling me. So I have this insanity that is not cured through therapy, that is not cured through medication, that is cured through a spiritual experience. That we depend on a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Stop waiting and looking for your God because your God is here now. In the big book it says, may you find him now. Not tomorrow. Not next week. But now. But there are certain little things you're going to have to adopt. And they say, Daniel, you're just going to have to change one little thing about yourself. So what is it? Everything. Why? I mean, don't drug, I don't drink. I mean, why do I have, what is it I have? Well, it's the whole way of thinking. This morning meditation, right at page 86, and upon awakening, we ask our God that we be religious or divorced, selfish motives, and all that other stuff. I don't look for God in the heavens anymore. I have a God today that works in the present, today. He went to a lot of trouble to make this day for me. Because he's happy with me. He made a beautiful day for me. But I have to remember two things. Do I want expectations in my life, or do I want serenity? Can't have both. Choose serenity and lower expectations. Choose expectations and no surrender. I can follow God's will being serene than being crazy. Expectation of people, places, and things are one of the most frustrating things to do in life. Why? Because they won't do what I want them to do. If you just listen to me, my life would be better. I wouldn't have to stay up late at night wondering where you are, what you've been doing, what are you drinking, what are you eating. That is tiresome. But that's how I live. So I can endure, be entitled to be rewarded. And that's how I live. Yet when I live in the present, I can't live like that. Because today God prepared this day for me. So I don't walk around feeling deprived. I don't walk around feeling like I'm shortchanged. Well, maybe 2 hours because it's California. But I'll get it more. I think I'm going to get 3 when I go back home. Because tomorrow we're going to daylight savings time, right? I'm going to get 3, man. I'm really letting out. So I don't feel deprived. The addict will always feel deprived. When alcoholics and drug addicts talk to me, I say, you know what? Don't talk to me about your problems. Don't tell me. Do it. So if you give me a reason to explain to you, I'll talk to you all day long about why I do these things. I might be bipolar. I'll tell you what, maybe bipolar, but maybe I'm tripolar. Don't give me two, I want three. More is better, remember. You know what, Daniel? You may be manic, or bipolar, schizophrenic, or maybe you're an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a schizophrenic, that's what I am. Don't label me an alcoholic. No, don't label me a compulsive reader. I'm not that. I just like food. You ever hear anybody? I love food. I love food, really. If breaking chairs and fearing to fly in planes because you can't fit in the seat, you know what's the worst thing they could have done when I was heavy? Is give me clothes for Christmas. I hated that. Because it would always come like this. Here, I bought this for you. I hope it fits. But the receipt's in there if you need to exchange it. I am so embarrassed. And sure enough, I go try on that cloth, and it's too tight. Can't buckle it. And I go back. How'd it go? Did it fit? Oh, yeah, that'll be fine. Well, why didn't you wear it? Well, I don't want to wear it now. It's demoralizing, isn't it? When your doctor says, you know what, Dan, you have diabetes type 2, you have high blood pressure, you have acid reflux, sleep apnea, you have chronic back pain, your knees are shot, maybe you should do something about your weight. Oh, yeah, no, weight's not the problem. It's just all these other things that are happening, that's why. My body says, no, we can't. My brain says, yes, we can. That's the insanity. So, if I want to surrender today, I have to be willing to let go and let God. But to who are you surrendering to? And last night we asked, what do you want in God? Well, I want to content God. This way I don't have to walk around feeling guilty, resentful, or shameful, bless you, for everything. You know? So if he's not pissed off at me, why should I be pissed off at you? Does it make sense? Now, we talked about the jailer, you know. We have people living between our brain, or in between our head, and the cells up there. And they live there rent-free. But the jailer also lives in jail. You know? So, third step, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. If you understand him, oh man, that includes everything. My thoughts, my emotions, my food. You mean God wants my food? Yeah. Everything I have control over, I have problems with. Everything. The stuff I have no control over, I have no problems with. So you connect the dots. Okay. Let's see. Daniel, food, drugs and alcohol equals bad luck. No, it equals problems. So that means I need to let go of things that don't belong to me. Am I doing God's will or God's job? And the ones that I have control over are the ones that belong to God. Leave them alone. But you don't understand. If I don't fix it, do it now, who's going to do it? And I told you guys last night, as I was told, God doesn't have grandchildren. My kids have their own God. And it ain't me. It isn't me. I can't do anything for their life. I can't fix them, repair them, or tackle them. I'll try. Then it drives me so nuts, I go back and eat. So I have to stop answering my feelings with food and be willing to set myself to have a meal when it's time to have a meal. And I was asking, how does it feel to be hungry? You know, we were asking last night. Where do you feel your hunger? I never felt. I only ate. I just ate just in case I get hungry. I ate before we went out to make sure, because if we go to your house, there's not enough food. I don't want to starve to death. Or if I'm going to go out with you, I'm going to eat before so you don't think I'm eating a lot. It's enough. I think there's enough time wasted on the symptom and not addressing the cause. This cause is I have a spiritual malady. That's the problem. It manifests itself three ways: physical, emotional, and physical. The three-legged stool. And they came out with a ninth step, or ninth tool, right? Action. I don't imagine the debate to come out how to word that. Oh my God, what does it mean? Join a gym? Ride, run, what I got? Well, you got to do something about it. Simple. Simple. You know, this program, I'm a firm believer that if we had an IQ of about 60, we'd be successful in this program. Why? Because it says, sit down, sit down. Sit up and listen, we listen. Write, we write. Read, we read. Call me in the morning, we call in the morning. But we've had such high IQs, we know too much, and we're exempt from all of the rules. Call me tomorrow, I'll call you next week. You know? Go to a meeting, three times a week, I'll go once a month. So no, I have other things to do, remember. And I'll tell you this, this has been my experience. When it comes to my recovery, I'm always going to have so many obstacles. Obstacles, family problems, financial problems, all these problems, no time. But when it comes to practicing my disease, I never have obstacles. Yeah, you want to join us for donuts? Oh, no, I can't. I have too many problems right now. I can't go with you. Sure, let's go. Yeah. Let's go try the green rib joint. Oh, no. I have to do my homework. Sure, let's go. All you can eat day. All you can eat? Wow. One of the final blows to hit my bottom was I went to an all-you-can-eat Chinese food restaurant. It's huge. And this family of four, a couple with two young kids, about six, seven. You know kids how they are. And I'm big. I'm size 58, and I'm walking with my plate. And this sounds like I'm an architect. I put all stacked all this food like this. It was really beautiful, I thought. It kind of reminded me of, you know, Close Encounters of the Fifth Element. Mom, Del Hill or whatever. Del Mom. And I'm walking back to my table. You know, I got my Diet Coke on the tray. You know, Diet Coke is good. Because if you eat a lot and you drink a Diet Coke, it runs away the calories. That's what I thought. Oh, cool. That's all. So, and I walk him back, and I sit down, and they had chairs that had armrests. So I looked for the chair that didn't have armrests because I couldn't sit. So I found the chair that didn't have it, and I brought it back. And the little kid says out loud, "Look at that fat man. Is he huge?" And they went, "Yeah, he is." They start giggling. And the parents said, "Shh, don't say quiet." And they themselves started laughing. And I felt so ashamed, so embarrassed. Again. That I was pissed off at those people for noticing. I hated you. I wanted to kill them. Because not only did you notice my fat, you pointed it out to me, now you screwed up my meal. So I left that food, I went home, and I gorged myself at home. Hiding, so nobody would see me. Why? Because I am uncomfortable in my own skin. I hate myself. And I don't know what to do with these feelings except eat. So, if you've hit enough bottoms and you're ready to surrender, this is the day. This is the weekend. This is today. This is your week. What I'm telling you is nothing new. I mean, I've heard it before. There's nothing original about what I'm telling you. Nothing. I've heard it. It was said to me. But the thing is, the timing now. Through the timing factor. Where are you? Are you willing to listen now? Are you willing to wake up? Are you willing to change? Now, change cannot come unless you get lost. You have loss. You can't have change without loss. Ouch. I don't like that. So I may have loss of control, loss of family members, lots of financial problems, but the change is going to come. And the question is, are you ready for the change? Are you ready to take that step of faith? Faith without words is dead. That you trust. That's the hard one. These frogs are in log and pond. They make a decision. One makes a decision to jump off the log. How many are in the log? Three. Just made a decision. We haven't jumped. Many of us make decisions all day long, but we never jump. It's too scary. I'm not ready. Well, once again, here we go. If you're not ready, if you die today, this is as good as it got. It's not a rehearsal. I don't know what else to say. I mean, life is telling you, hey, I appreciate these days that you have. Enjoy it. Oh, no, no, I have too many things to worry about. Oh, no, no, I have other plans. But what I'm asking you today is, are you ready to take that step? You've already touched step one. You've already done step two. I'm making a decision to turn my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions, my actions to the care of God, step three. So what am I supposed to do, Daniel? Walk around like a saint? Holy, walking on water? No, no. We won't walk on water. We'll slip in it. No, there's nothing. And that's the other one. I'm a perfectionist. I want everything so perfect that I just get overwhelmed and I won't do it unless I do it right. So I don't do it. But I have these things about how life should be, what it should look like, because I really believe in Norman Rockwell painting up the Thanksgiving dinner. You get it? What a perfect family. You go, wow, that is great. You know, I wasn't raised like that. And as I find out, as I get older, there's no such thing as perfection. There is no perfect food plan. There is no perfect sponsor. There is no perfect group. There is no perfect nothing. Why? Because we're supposed to accept our life as it is. Big four. I've been having a copy of that. Since they came out with the third edition, it really screwed me up. They run the hell everything. I don't know what they're thinking. They never consulted me about this one. You got plans here. Right there, no problem. Here it is, there it is. Okay. Dr. Paul. Dr. Paulo. And we've known it for years, and it's always been there. And the acceptance part, check this out, if you look at it. And it says page 417 of the third edition, 449 from the second edition, but no resentment. Before we start reading about the acceptance, the paragraph before says, now what am I going to do about it? When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. From that moment on, I have not had a single compulsion to drink. When I focus on the answer, living in the answer. What's the answer? I take that step. I take the action, and acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find a person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it's supposed to be at this moment. Doesn't mean it's going to be forever. It's just at this moment, that's the way it's supposed to be. Years ago, I got my heart broken. I'm crying to my sponsor. Oh, you should have done this. He went, she loved me. That's the way it is for now. Doesn't mean it'll be forever. Oh, okay. That's the way it is for now. Just for today, right now, that's the way it's supposed to be. You know, and I got some sort of calmness from that. I said, oh, that's cool. I thought this was going to be forever. Did she ever come back? No. But that's the way it was. See, I don't like to think that things are temporary. I always think permanent. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Now here's the clincher. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Until I accept my compulsion of being a compulsive overeater as a disease, that it really is a disease that it really will kill me, I will not stay abstinent. That I will never be able to control donuts, candy bars, chocolate, cakes, amounts of food, I will never be able to control it. So I'd better accept that. And that's where I come up to this big wall that I've been fighting all my life. And I go, I can't win. I can't win. Every time I do, I just get my butt kicked. I can't win. And this is where the key is. We take the action, take the step, we trust God, and we are the beehive. We need to be together. Throughout the week, we'll probably go out into the fields and do our pollen collecting, but we always need to come back to the beehive. You always have to have a home group. You can't do program alone. You can't be in program from TV or online. I really believe in human contact because you know why? God has a skin. And it's to you. That's how I get the message. It's kind of hard to feel the emotion the way you're telling me on an email or by phone. We were talking about that earlier on the table. I would much rather face to face. And I've told my sponsor some very embarrassing things. And he doesn't judge me. Top it off, he's a low top. I can't hear him half the time. And I'm too embarrassed to say, what? So I said, okay. I walked away confused. I don't know what he said. I had a sponsor. This is happening. Well, whatever. Well, anyway, you don't understand. This is whatever. Don, I don't think you understand. These things are happening to me. He says, you know, why don't you put it away for a while? And, you know, put it away for a few days. Do that, I'll forget about it. Precisely. How important is it? Do I want to be happy or do I want to be correct? And he says, I'm not correct, well, I'm going to eat. Life is not meant for it to be always my way. Tell me when you want me to shut up. Guys, want me to stop? Is it time? Okay, yeah, because I, you know. So anyway, all I'm trying to say is this is the day that the Lord has made. I will rejoice in it. You know, and I'll talk to you a little bit about it and then talk to you afterwards if you want. Thank you.